Today's critique explores From Entanglement to Governance, a highly ambitious manuscript that utilizes abstract algebra, specifically the Fano plane, and exceptional Lie groups, to propose a unified relational framework for understanding systemic coherence and failure across physics, biology, economics, and governance. And jumping right into the feedback, the transition from the rigorous algebraic foundation to the cross-domain applications leaves a crucial explanatory gap regarding the seven relational primitives.
Yeah, that really is the major hurdle right out of the gate. Because the opening half of this manuscript is just this stunning piece of conceptual architecture. I mean, it meticulously defines these seven specific relational roles.
Right. You've got constraint, margin, state, disturbance.
Exactly. And perception, regulation, and options. And it elegantly maps all of these onto the Fano plane, right? It uses octonionic multiplication to show how they all interact. But the weakness emerges the moment we enter the applied chapters on medicine, ecology, and economics.
They just completely disappear.
They do. In those applied sections, these seven highly specific primitives largely vanish. The text just defaults to much broader kind of generic discussions of, you know, fibers and base spaces and general cohomology.
Yeah, which makes the detailed mathematical buildup feel disconnected from the practical realities of those domains. It feels like we just spent hours looking at the blueprints for a highly intricate seven-cylinder engine on a workbench. But when we finally put it into the car to drive it, we only talk about the chassis and the steering wheel.
That is a perfect analogy. You completely lose sight of the specific mechanisms powering the vehicle.
Right. And if you're reading this and thinking, you know, wait, how does an abstract geometry concept actually apply to a biological organism? Well, you are not alone. That is exactly where the manuscript loses the reader.
That's the core issue. The reader has invested a significant cognitive effort to understand how a constraint interacts with a margin and a state to form a specific mathematical triad. To just abandon those precise terms in the real-world applications is a massive missed opportunity.
So the suggestion here is to explicitly trace the seven original primitives through at least one or two of the domain-specific examples to prove the framework's specific granular utility.
Exactly. Show the reader how the algebra actually manifests in physical reality. Like, let's unpack a concrete example. In the chapter discussing medicine, the text could explicitly map a disease state directly to the specific Fano triads.
Okay, yeah, because the foundation establishes the triad of constraint, margin, and state, right? And then also state, disturbance, and regulation.
Right. So let's look at something like metabolic syndrome. How do we translate the algebra into biology? We need to clearly define what physiological component acts as the margin in that triad.
Oh, I see. So for metabolic syndrome, the margin could be like the body's insulin buffering capacity.
Yes. And the state is the baseline blood glucose level. And the constraint is the absolute limit of cellular receptor uptake.
Wow. Okay. That makes it super clear.
And from there, we could explicitly show how the non-associative breakdown of that insulin buffering capacity, like when it's hit with a disturbance, say a massive glycemic load, it fails to trigger the proper regulation.
Which creates the exact topological obstruction that leads to the disease.
Exactly. By walking the reader through that exact sequence, we show how the loss of the biological margin creates the obstruction the math predicts. Naming the margin and the regulation in visceral biological terms suddenly gives the math a pulse.
I love that, because when you explain it that way, non-associativity isn't just some rule on a chalkboard, right? It means the biological order of operations has literally broken down.
Right. The system can't process the inputs correctly anymore.
So let's look at how we can apply this granular mapping to the ecology chapter too. The text discusses ecosystems and food webs, but it stays really high level.
Yeah, a bit too abstract.
So as another concrete example, the author could map out a specific predator-prey network, show exactly which species or which resource flows occupy the constraint nodes versus the options nodes.
That would be great. Let's take a forest ecosystem. If we're looking at a complex trophic network, the constraint node might be the absolute nitrogen and phosphorus availability in the soil.
Because that's a hard physical limit.
Exactly. And the margin might be the stored biomass in the underbrush. then the options could represent the adaptive foraging strategies of a keystone predator, like a wolf pack, shifting its diet based on seasonal changes.
Ah, so if we map those seven primitive roles onto actual ecological elements, the reader finally sees the final plane operating in the wild.
Right. We need to show them that a predator's behavior is quite literally the mathematical option node firing to maintain systemic coherence.
Okay, I buy that we can map the variables in theory if we're careful about it. We can point to the wolf and say, you know, that is the option node. But what happens when we step out of the textbook and into the field?
That is the big question.
Because the concept of using cohomological abstraction as an early warning signal remains too theoretical to serve the text's goal of providing an actionable new diagnostic paradigm.
Yeah, the theoretical ambition here is undeniably brilliant. I mean, the material makes a strong case for structural failure by claiming systemic breakdown can be detected well before observable variables change.
Right. It argues we can see a crash coming by measuring rising obstruction or finding non-zero associators in the topology.
But the weakness lies in the practical implementation. The text offers basically no guidance on how a practitioner is supposed to extract these abstract algebraic measures from real-world noisy data.
Which leaves the early warning system as a compelling metaphor rather than a usable scientific tool.
Exactly. If I'm an ecologist looking at a data set of thousands of overlapping species interactions, how do I actually calculate an associator?
You don't. Data in ecology or economics doesn't look like clean algebraic equations. It's incomplete, it's full of friction, it's just incredibly messy.
Right.
Is there a risk that without a methodological bridge, practitioners will just nod at the beautiful math, but return to using standard statistical variables? Oh, absolutely. If I don't know how to extract the math from my spreadsheet, I'm just going to go back to what works.
So to solve this, the suggestion is to provide a theoretical blueprint or methodological bridge for how a practitioner would computationally operationalize these topological metrics from available system data.
But I want to push back a bit here, though. If we introduce more math to solve a math problem, aren't we just trading one highly theoretical concept for another? Like, how does an everyday researcher actually execute this?
That's a totally fair challenge, which is why we need to point them to established computational tools. For a concrete example, the text could suggest a specific computational method that aligns with the math, such as using topological data analysis.
Oh, TDA, right.
Yeah, TDA, specifically using persistent homology. It's practically designed to proxy things like the associator or cohomological obstruction in a messy data set.
Because it literally looks for topological holes or blockages in point cloud data, right?
Exactly. By pointing the reader toward TDA, you give them a recognized existing algorithmic workflow. You're basically telling them, here is the code you can write to find the hidden geometry I've been describing.
That makes a lot of sense. It grounds it in a tool that data scientists are already using. So let's look at how we might build a methodological bridge for the economics chapter.
Okay, yeah, because you can't just put abstract concepts like credit flows under a microscope.
Right. So as another concrete example, the text could provide a hypothetical workflow of how a policymaker might take standard economic data like GDP, supply chain network graphs, credit flows, and structure it into what the text calls a sheaf.
Oh, a sheaf is such a brilliant concept for economics. Because it tracks how local data patches glue together globally.
It's like stitching together a patchwork quilt, right?
Yeah, think of it exactly like a quilt. Locally, if you look at any single square of fabric, it looks perfectly fine. But if you try to sew all those flat squares together to wrap around a three-dimensional shape, and the geometry doesn't align,
the quilt just stretches and tears.
Exactly. That is what a sheaf failure is. The text needs to concretely explain how a data scientist would computationally test for those gluing failures in the economy.
Right. So if local credit markets are reporting stability and local manufacturing outputs look normal, but the global supply chain graph shows structural decoupling, the computational workflow could flag a sheaf failure.
Yes. It takes the concept out of the realm of abstract algebraic topology and puts it into an algorithmic dashboard that a central bank could actually look at.
Which is huge. And we can push this into medical diagnostics as well to really drive the point home.
Definitely. As a final concrete example here, the text could outline a hypothetical clinical trial design that tracks the E7 cortic invariant using high-frequency biometric data.
And for our listeners, think of this E7 cortic invariant as a mathematical fingerprint that stays perfectly intact as long as the biological system is healthy.
Right. It's a marker of coherence.
So if we track high-frequency biometric data, like heart rate variability or a continuous glucose monitor, blood oxygen levels, the moment that fingerprint starts to warp, we know the system is failing, even if the patient feels totally fine.
That is a phenomenal way to explain it. And we don't need the author to actually conduct this massive clinical trial.
No, of course not.
But simply outlining the architecture of the trial, showing which specific biometrics serve as proxies for the structural invariant, it makes the diagnostic paradigm incredibly real for medical researchers reading the work.
It closes the gap between the beautiful algebraic symmetry and the messy reality of data collection. Okay, so we've mapped the system's variables. We've built the computational dashboard to measure the impending failures.
The final question is what we actually do about it once the alarm starts ringing.
Exactly. Which leads directly to the text's philosophical climax regarding action and constraint. Reserving the concept of wu-wei entirely for the final chapter creates a jarring tonal shift that isolates the framework's philosophical payload from its structural arguments.
Yeah, the sudden introduction of the Taoist concept of wu-wei, you know, action without forcing, in chapter 15, feels like a philosophical add-on rather than the inevitable consequence of the math.
It's a profound conceptual arrival point, but it's isolated.
Right. While the text claims wu-wei is the operational expression of invariant preservation, this vital connection is not woven into the preceding applied chapters. So the ending feels disconnected from the rigorous systems analysis that came before.
It feels a bit like reading a dense textbook on quantum mechanics that suddenly ends with a poem about gravity.
That's exactly how it reads.
The sentiment is beautiful, but it hasn't been structurally earned by the preceding text. If wu-wei is truly the physical and mathematical reality of acting in accordance with a system's relational coherence, we should see it operating in the biological and economic systems long before we give it a philosophical label.
I couldn't agree more. So the suggestion here is to retroactively weave the principle of action without forcing into the domain-specific interventions earlier in the material?
Showing the philosophy in action before formally naming it.
Exactly. We need to demonstrate why forcing a system breaks its mathematical associativity. By the time the reader reaches chapter 15, they should already understand the physical mechanism of non-forcing.
So that the term wu-wei feels like a puzzle piece clicking perfectly into a space that was deliberately left open for it. Let's explore some concrete examples of how to weave this in earlier.
Okay.
In the governance chapter, the text already discusses navigation as opposed to control. The author could explicitly frame this navigation as a structural precursor to wu-wei.
Oh, by contrasting a forcing policy with a wu-wei policy?
Right. Contrast a forcing policy, like rigid price controls that actively disrupt the Fanon triads, with a non-forcing one. Price controls ignore the organic constraints and margins of the market. They try to artificially pin the state node in place, which mathematically shatters the associativity.
That is exactly the mechanism we need to highlight. A forcing action breaks associativity, while a wu-wei action preserves it.
So what would the wu-wei policy look like there?
You'd contrast those price controls with a wu-wei policy like dynamic buffer stock margins that preserve the invariant.
A dynamic buffer stock naturally absorbs economic shocks without imposing artificial friction.
It widens the margin notes where the system can naturally find its own equilibrium.
Right, it doesn't force a price.
And we can do the exact same thing in the medicine chapter. The text could describe treatments that support homeostasis, like microbiome restoration, as structural alignment.
Because the microbiome is a massive, highly entangled ecological network. So restoring it is a non-forcing action.
Exactly. And this would be contrasted with forceful interventions, like broad-spectrum antibiotics. They're the ultimate forcing mechanism.
Because they just wipe everything out.
Right. They might cure a localized issue, but they act as a blunt instrument that induces a sheath failure globally. They destroy the topological integrity of the immune system in the process.
So a major underlying truth here is that optimization often destroys coherence. When we hyper-optimize one single variable, like maximizing crop yield with synthetic fertilizers or maximizing quarterly profits at the expense of supply chain resilience, we force the system.
We stretch the mathematical fiber until it snaps.
Yeah.
And if we see that exact concept of non-forcing in the medicine, ecology, and economics chapters, then when Chapter 15 finally introduces Wu Wei, we can frame it simply as the formal historical name for the mathematical pattern the reader has already seen.
Yes, it entirely removes the risk of the final chapter feeling like a mystical or a purely philosophical conclusion. It becomes a rigorously earned structural necessity.
The math strictly demands non-forcing interactions.
Right. Ancient philosophy just happened to have the perfect word for it, thousands of years before we had the algebra to prove it.
That is such a brilliant way to frame it. And that brings us to the end of today's critique. To recap the three main points. First, there is a critical need to explicitly map the seven Fano primitives in the applied chapters to avoid a disconnect between the algebra and the reality.
Second, the necessity of operationalizing the topological diagnostics for real-world data to make the early warning systems usable.
And third, the significant benefit of weaving the philosophy of Wu Wei throughout the domain examples rather than isolating it at the end.
Discussed. Explicitly map the constraint, margin, and state triads to biological and ecological examples, like tracing insulin buffering in metabolic syndrome.
Right, or nutrient constraints in predator-prey networks.
Exactly. Also, suggest data science bridges, like using topological data analysis and persistent homology for calculating the associator in noisy datasets.
And finally, use the domain chapters to demonstrate action without forcing through policies like dynamic buffer stocks or homeostasis treatments well before formally introducing Wu Wei.
We genuinely want to help strengthen this incredibly ambitious material, and we warmly invite the author to refine the manuscript and submit it back for another critique.
You know, it is one thing to draw a map of the observable world, to point at the chassis and the steering wheel and think you understand the car, but it is entirely another to map the hidden blueprints of the engine itself. When we finally see how those relational cylinders fire, we realize the map isn't just showing us where we are. It's showing us how the world holds itself together.